trauma can be passed from your grandparents to you. Something that happened to them manipulates your DNA, and you can actually, in a way, experience that trauma. Today, on Learning More, we learn more about inherited family trauma. Thanks for listening and subscribing to Learning More, where each week we bring you a new story about people, inventions, pop culture, and life. I'm Russ, and this week we are talking about inherited family trauma. And I've got probably the best person on earth to talk about this. He did an amazing book. It's called It Didn't Start With You, How Inherited Family Trauma Shapes Who We Are and How We End the Cycle. This book is the winner, actually, of the 2016 Silver Nautilus Book Award in Psychology, and it is Mark Wulin that is joining me.
Thank you, Russ. Thank you for having me.
All right. I know you're struggling with voice, so, you know, we've got Mark drinking hot tea. He's doing whatever he can here, and we are talking today.
They'll get a voice. It may not sound like mine.
All right. Okay, so inherited family trauma. That is what we are talking about today. I think we should probably start with a definition. Can you tell us exactly what that is?
Let's say one of our parents or our grandparents lost their mother or father when they were young or experienced some other type of trauma. Maybe our mother or father was raised by a grandparent or a relative or placed in an orphanage. Mm-hmm. Or maybe one of their siblings died tragically. An event like this can break the heart of the family, but the reaction to this event, the reaction to the trauma, doesn't necessarily stop with the people who experienced it. The feelings, the sensations, specifically the stress response, the way our genes express, this can pass forward to the children and the grandchildren, affecting them in a similar way, even though they didn't personally experience this trauma. I guess if I had to put it in a nutshell, I'd say the memories of this trauma are imprinted in our parents or grandparents' sperm cells and egg cells. And then this information of this trauma passes forward to us as children. And as a result, here we are born with an altered brain that will help us biologically cope with the trauma that our parent or grandparent experienced.
So the way that you're phrasing that, it seems like it's trauma that we may not even have heard a story about, something that just happened to them, but it's we're still experiencing it or knowing about it. Let's say a grandparent was in a fire or something along those lines, but we never heard about that fire or knew about that fire.
Yes, it can very much be the case. Even events that we're not aware of, we're born with maybe a hypervigilance or a watchfulness or an anxiety or a depression geared to help us deal with this event, even though the event didn't happen to us personally. When a trauma happens, it changes us. Literally, it causes a chemical change in our DNA. And this can change how our genes function, sometimes for generations. After this traumatic event, a chemical tag will attach to our DNA and tell the cells to use or ignore certain genes, enabling us to better deal with this trauma that just happened. And then the way our genes are affected changes how we act or feel. For example, we can become sensitive or reactive to situations that are similar to the original trauma, even if that original trauma occurred in a past generation, so that we have a better chance of surviving it in this generation. The example you used about the fire is a good one. Let's say our grandparents came from a war-torn country. So people are being shot, bombs are going off, uniformed men are lining people up in the square, people are being taken away, horrifying scenes are all around us. You know, our grandparents would develop an epigenetic adaptation, let's call it a skill set, to deal with this trauma. Let's say that in this skill set are things like sharper reflexes and quicker reaction times and reactions to the violence to help them survive this trauma they're experiencing. Well, that's what's passed forward. So here we are inheriting a stress response with the dials set to 10, preparing for this catastrophe, this war that never arrives. And we don't make the link that our anxiety, our hypervigilance, our tightening, our inner tightening, our depression is connected to our parents and our grandparents. We just think we're wired this way.
So I guess it's similar to like a physical, instead of mental, let's talk physical, like a cancer or something like that, right? Where it's passed down, we're more predisposed for a certain type of cancer because our grandparents had it or parents had it. Am I thinking about this in the correct way? Like, you know, the heredity of these symptoms?
You are. And because I work with trauma, I'm aware of and noticing and seeing the effects of how our DNA is wired or expressing. You know, the DNA strand doesn't change, but the way it's expressing does change. And here it is wired to biologically prepare us to deal with this trauma that happened to them, even though we didn't hear of the trauma, don't know of the trauma, maybe heard about it through story. But even to make your point earlier, you're right. We don't even have to know. For example, we can be wired to deal with the effects of a war, a fire, a rape, a assault, and never even know that that took place in our family history.
How can someone tell if this is what they're experiencing?
I get asked this question a lot, and I like the question because we really don't know until we do some self-exploration. For example, yes, we can be born with an anxiety or a depression and never separate it from the events of the previous generation. But we can also experience a fear or a symptom or begin acting in a certain way that strikes suddenly or unexpectedly when we reach a certain age, for example. Maybe age 30, grandma loses grandpa in an accident at age 30 and she never marries again and she stays alone. And then around the age of 30, our mother and father, they begin to separate. So there's this age that becomes relative, age 30-ish, where there's aloneness that takes place in the family history. So here we are without making the connection, looking at our partner and thinking he or she doesn't do it for us anymore around the same age without realizing we are connected to traumas. In other words, that age can be sort of like an ancestral alarm clock that rings in the body. It's not just ages. It's milestones or events in our lives that can become triggering events. For example, as soon as we get married, that can stir the pot. In the book, I talk about a woman who, she loved her fiancé. She couldn't wait to marry him. He was the perfect guy. And as soon as she was married, she felt trapped. And she couldn't understand it. Everything on paper matched up, but here she was feeling trapped and shut down, and she didn't realize it, but the marriage was the triggering event. So when we looked in her family history, we saw that both grandmothers had been given away as child brides, one at 9 and one at 12 back in Iraq to much older men, you know, men 30, 40 years older. And it was so interesting. The trauma expressed differently in both of her sisters. Her one sister married a much older man, 30 years older, and the other sister refused to even date at all, lest she feel trapped. So you can see that we can have these triggering events. Another one would be moving to a new place, and then suddenly we become depressed, like our ancestors that were persecuted, forced out of their homeland. Another one could be being rejected by a partner. And the grief is insurmountable. And it doesn't really make sense. Maybe we were only with this person for 3-4 months, but we feel absolutely devastated. So the question is that grief out of place, or is it taking us back to a much earlier grief perhaps a break in the attachment with our mom. Another triggering event could be having a child. And it's as though that ancestral alarm clock again starts ringing inside of us. I once worked with this woman. She was consumed with anxiety as soon as she became pregnant, but she didn't connect it to that. She came to the office and said, "Oh my God, I'm completely anxious all the time now." And of course I said, "When did this start?" And she said, "I don't know, 7 months ago." What happened 7 or 8 months ago? "Well, that's when I became pregnant." And I said, "So you're pregnant now?" And she said, yes, I am. And I ask one of the questions that I ask in the book, what's the worst thing that could happen to you? What's your worst fear if you get pregnant, if you have a child? And immediately she says, "I'll harm my child. I could harm this child." And so I ask the obvious questions. Have you ever harmed a child? No. Did anyone in your family ever harm a child? And she was just about to say no until she said, "Oh my God, my grandmother is a young woman. She lit a candle and the curtains caught on fire and the house caught on fire and she couldn't get her baby out and the baby died." And then she said, "But we were never allowed to talk about it." And in that moment, she made the link that she had inherited the terror from her grandmother's experience. And then after that, we were able to break the pattern.
Oh, interesting. Okay, well, let's talk about this. What about in cases where the family history is not known? I'm thinking of cases of like adoption. How can you diagnose inherited family trauma in those cases?
Yeah, I love where you're leading me, because that's going to take us into trauma language, which is what I focus on in the book. I talk about a verbal trauma language and a nonverbal trauma language. And I can explain those as we get deep in this conversation. But I want to answer your first question first. If there's no information at all, we're adopted, our parents are deceased, our parents refuse to talk about their history. This information lives in our words. It lives in that trauma language. It lives in our fears. It lives in our unexplained symptoms. It lives in our self-destructive or self-sabotaging behaviors. It lives in the symptoms of an illness that appear after some type of unsettling event in our lives. Or remember, we talked about ages. All of a sudden, age 30, which is this traumatic, triggering time in the family history. So again, we see these repetitions at a similar age, age 22, age 30, age 43. Or in our relationship struggles, you can see these repetitions in who we choose, the types of ways we treat people, the types of ways we allow ourselves to be treated, how we deal with money and success. All this forms a breadcrumb trail that gives us a glimpse of what might have happened in our family history, even if the story's been lost or kept secret. Remember, I talked a few minutes ago about that woman who was consumed with anxiety, and she gave me this sentence, "I'll harm a child. I'll harm my child." That's verbal trauma language. And even if she didn't know the story, even if she said, "Gee, I can't think of anything," we would know because of what happens in her body and the language that she is speaking. We would know something like this must have taken place. So one of the things I do in the book is I teach people to become detectives of this trauma language, to teach people to listen to the things that they say. It's very often someone will say something like, "I don't deserve to live," or "I'm a terrible person. I'll do something terrible," or "I'll go crazy. I'll be locked up." These are the type of sentences that link to traumatic events in the family history. That's what I call verbal trauma language. And again, nonverbal trauma language is we're looking for the physical or emotional symptoms that show up after some type of unsettling event. I talked about this a few minutes ago, the fears, the anxieties that arise after a situation that's similar to a trauma in our family history.
Okay. I wrote down like 7 questions, but we're going to have to take a short break here. So we'll have those answers to those 7 questions when we come back. We'll be right back. If you enjoy history, maybe you're just feeling a little nostalgic, or you wonder who's having a birthday today, or maybe you need a reason to celebrate. Well, we've got the perfect podcast for you. It is called This Is Today. And each and every day, we talk about the historic events, celebrity birthdays. We also talk about whatever is going on today. There's always something to celebrate when you listen to This Is Today. And at just 10 minutes each day, you can make it a daily habit. You can even add it to your Alexa Flash briefing. Click the link in the description or just search in your favorite podcast app for This Is Today. And welcome back. Thanks for listening to Learning More. I'm Russ. I'm joined by Mark Woolen. He has the book, It Didn't Start With You, How Inherited Family Trauma Shapes Who We Are and How to End the Cycle. It's won the Silver Nautilus Book Award in Psychology from 2016. There is a link to the book in the description of this podcast, as well as the Family Constellation Institute and Mark's website. So be sure to go check those out. Mark, thank you so much for joining me again. And so as I said before the break there, I wrote down a bunch of questions here. The first one, it seems like in hearing about this, that this in a way gives us some sort of, I guess, almost like evolutionary advantage, right? Like it's going to protect us from something. Maybe those messages are being passed down for some sort of evolutionary reason. Am I making too much of a leap here?
No, absolutely. However, they can also have a negative effect in keeping our bodies amped up or predisposed to fight or flight or freeze. So we can be walking around with a biological trauma response connected to a trauma that happened in the generation prior. And yes, it's giving us a certain skill set and perhaps a resilience and opportunities for keeping ourselves safe. But on the other side of that equation, there are ways in which we're born with stress and perpetuating that stress.
You know, so one of the questions I wrote down before we went into break was on what you said about ages. And I'm thinking, okay, so if we're looking back at a particular age and the traumatic event associated with that and that impacting our life at a certain age or the same age as it did our ancestors. So could we look at that and say, you know, grandma was divorced at the age of 45, mom was divorced at the age of 45. Does that mean that potentially I'm at a higher risk of either being having anxiety, let's say, towards being divorced at 45 or actually potentially even getting divorced at 45? Can we use that age as, I guess, in a way, a predictor for our future?
So grandma being widowed and losing the love of her life at 30 could be more impactful, say, than divorce. Divorce might not necessarily create a traumatic imprint, but an early death might.
Gotcha.
So the significance of the trauma would be more pertinent in terms of talking about predictive elements in our family history. So if a great, for example, our father going to war as a 19-year-old guy and all, he's in a foxhole and maybe he's the only one in his platoon to survive. And he has both a traumatic experience of thinking he's going to die, watching his buddy being shot, feeling survivor's guilt. These are significant traumas. And then in a way, I would be curious to wonder what happens to his son around the same age at 19, 20, 18. In that way, yes, I do see a parallel between significant traumas and ages in the subsequent generation. Now, that's not all the time. Ages is only one thing. Mm-hmm. Let's say the same boy is in the next generation experiences a significant trauma in maybe a mass shooting. So that could be the triggering event. So it isn't necessarily ages in and of themselves. Ages, events, like we talked about, getting married, could be an event. Mm. Having children could be an event. Being left could be an event. Something that would simulate the experience of war, not necessarily an age, though it could be, but something that would simulate this could also be triggering for his son.
You know, this makes me think of the podcast that I did. I think it was episode 3 of Learning More, where I talked about PTSD and CPTSD. I talked to about the children of Vietnam vets. I've also, you know, had talks about 9/11 and the children there. I think about, I guess the question here is about breaking the cycle. Once we've identified this, how do we get into breaking the cycle? Because I'm thinking now about PTSD, CPTSD, and, you know, passing this on to our children in various ways.
You just asked me several questions, not one question.
Yes, let me break it. we'll work through these questions,
so
I guess.
let me break that apart. So,
awesome.
You know, let's go to 9/11, for example.
Okay.
One of the researchers who's well known in the field of epigenetics, Rachel Yehuda, she was very watchful at this time of what happened with mothers who were pregnant at or near the World Trade Center and their babies. And she found that their babies were smaller for their gestational age. They were born with 16 different genes that expressed differently than children who weren't exposed to that trauma. She found that if the mothers had gone on to develop PTSD, the babies that they were pregnant with had gone on and developed PTSD. She also found that in traumatized survivors, the survivors and their children shared the exact gene changes in the same region of the same gene. She was looking at the FKBP5 gene, a gene involved in stress regulation and depressive disorders. So yes, traumas that we experience here today, perhaps even including the pandemic, will be remembered in a sense generationally. Boy, you also asked me how we heal. So I feel like I want to jump into that because I feel like the bearer of bad news. I'm only delivering the bad news, but I think it's time to deliver the good news as well. but there's actually a lot of good news here. You know, researchers are now able to reverse trauma symptoms in mice, and the implications are vast. So they take mice and expose them to traumatic events, and then they can observe the effects for 3 generations. For example, there'll be a change in DNA methylation or histone modifications or small non-coding RNA. I know I'm being technical here. These are mechanisms of transgenerational epigenetic inheritance. So what they've done is they've looked at these mice that they've traumatized, and then they placed these mice as adults in positive low-stress environments, and they found that their symptoms reversed, their behaviors improved. Hmm. There were actually changes in DNA methylation, which prevented the symptoms from being transmitted to the next generation. We can literally change how our DNA expresses. And mice aren't the only ones who benefit from positive experiences. It's how we heal from inherited family trauma. Basically, we've got to calm our brain's stress response, whether we've inherited that stress response from a parent or grandparent, or the trauma happened to us in early life. So when we talk about healing, you know, if you ask me the question, which you did, Russ, how do we heal? What do we do? We've got to have positive experiences that can change our brain. And then we need to practice the new feelings and the new sensations associated with these positive experiences. And then when we do this, we not only create new neural pathways, but we also begin to stimulate the release of feel-good neurotransmitters like dopamine or serotonin or GABA, or even stimulate the release of feel-good hormones in our body, like, for example, estrogen or oxytocin. But for me, who's interested in epigenetics, we can also change the way our DNA expresses. The very genes involved in the body's stress response can begin to function differently. And so if you ask, go ahead.
Well, I'm going to ask you, I think I'm going to ask what you're going for here. So
just one question at a time.
Yeah, exactly. One at a time. I'll see if I can do it. Is it just the trauma that passes, or is it the positive that passes as well? So when you break the cycle, is it actually improving later?
The reparation passes. So for example,
gotcha.
Here we are practicing sensations of comfort or support, or that's what I teach in the book, how to have comfort and support when there was none, or practicing sensations of compassion, or having a gratitude practice, you know, like Oprah used to tell us, have a gratitude practice. Mm-hmm. Well, she was spot on, because these types of experiences feed the prefrontal cortex and help us reframe the stress response, so it is a chance to downregulate. So a gratitude practice, a practice of compassion, a generosity practice, a loving kindness practice, practicing mindfulness, ultimately anything that allows us to feel strength and peace and joy inside, with wonder, curiosity, awe. These are all feeling states that feed the prefrontal cortex and help us calm down, help the brain calm down. The idea is to pull energy away from the limbic brain, the limbic system, our overactive amygdala that was either a result of an inheritance or again, over-energized from our early trauma in this life. So to bring engagement away from this limbic brain and bring engagement to the forebrain, again, the prefrontal cortex, where we can integrate these new experiences and our brains can change. We know from mindfulness studies that just by practicing mindfulness, we actually shrink the amygdala and our prefrontal cortex thickens. So when we do this, this is in a way nullifying the effects of trauma, staving off the transgenerational inheritance. In other words, we're changing the way that DNA expresses because we're doing our inner work. And by doing our inner work, we are, in a sense, protecting the next generation from receiving our unworked on stress response.
Going to your Oprah mention, if Oprah gives you a car, future generations are excited about cars. See? No, you know, I'm wondering, Mark, so why did you get into this? Why did you get started in this particular field of study?
Oh boy. Now we're going back a long time ago. Here I was in my early 30s, 31 years old, and I have symptoms that I can't explain. I begin to lose the vision in one of my eyes, and you know, I'm a little frightened, of course. I go to the doctors, and they tell me that I have a chronic form of retinopathy, and they can't treat it. And because of the way it's progressing, I have it in both eyes, even though only one of my eyes is affected. They're telling me to expect to lose the sight in both eyes. And I was, as you can imagine, terrified and desperate to find help. Mm-hmm. And Western medicine was telling me at this time, look, we know it's stress, but there's really nothing that we can do. There's no treatment. So I went on a search for healing, a search literally that led me halfway around the globe, as far as Indonesia, where I learned from, you know, several wise teachers who taught me some fundamental principles, one of which was the importance of healing my relationship with my parents. But before I could do that, heal with my parents, I had to heal what stood in the way, which is inherited family trauma, but I don't know it at the time. Mm. But I'll tell you it, specifically the anxiety that I had inherited from all my grandparents, who were all orphaned in some way. Three of them lost their mothers when they were babies, and the fourth lost her father when she was one. So ultimately, she loses her mother at the same time in the grief. And this anxiety, I would later learn, was the real cause of my vision loss. And, you know, I can tell you a story which is pertinent. You know, just like my parents, I inherit this feeling of being broken from my mother's love. I can't feel it. I don't trust it. And this is what passed down in my family. And I remember as a small boy, maybe I'm 5 or 6, feeling panicked every time she'd leave the house. And I'd run into her room and I'd cry into her scarves and nightgowns. And I'm thinking that I'd never see her again, that her smell would be the only thing that I had left, which would have been true for the grandparents, that they would have had a garment perhaps of their mother, a blanket or something, and that would have been the only thing left. And 40 years later, I shared this with my mom. I told her, you know, whenever you left the house, I would freak out and start crying. And she said, well, I did that too. When my mother left the house, and then my sister reading the book, she said the same thing. She said, honey, I would cry when mom left the house too. In other words, that feeling that we'd never see the mother again, that break in the attachment, that there wasn't enough motherness, right. There wasn't enough of her attunement. Once I healed my relationship with my mom, strangely, Russ, my vision came back.
Wow.
And yeah, wow. I didn't expect it at this point because I was learning to live.
Yeah.
But afterwards I said, okay, this is pretty significant. And I felt compelled to share some of the principles I learned and ultimately developed a method for healing the effects of inherited family trauma.
There's two ways, I guess, people can continue to learn more about this. One, of course, is to read the book. There's a link to the book in the podcast, but there's also, tell us about the work you do at the Family Constellation Institute.
So I teach clinicians how to use this work in their practice, and I have trainings online, good trainings actually, where people can stream, and I also can work with people one-on-one. There's a bit of a waiting list, of course, but you know, either I or one of the people I've trained can work with people that are struggling with the effects of inherited family trauma. You know, when I work with people, the first thing I do is I listen for this trauma language that we talked about. Mm-hmm. And then once we've isolated this trauma language, we track it back to an originating event, either in the early childhood or to the family history. And then we're ready to do the deep work to heal, which, as I talked about, involves many things, but mostly having positive experiences that allow us to feel integrated in our body and calm the brain's trauma response. So we can break this generation to generation traumatic reliving. And that's the key. Many of us are passing on a lot of pain and we don't need to. Biological trauma is a reality. That's true. But, you know, it doesn't have to be our destiny. We can change it. We can stop the cycle.
Mark Woolen, author of It Didn't Start With You, How Inherited Family Trauma Shapes Who We Are and How to End the Cycle. Mark, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, you're welcome, Russ. Thank you for having me. I enjoyed my talk with you.
As did I. And thank you for subscribing and listening to Learning More. Also, remember to check out our daily podcast called This Is Today, where you can learn the story of each day. We talk about national events, daily history, and we bring them into context with data and, of course, some laughs. This Is Today is available wherever you get your podcasts. There's also a link in the description of this podcast. Okay, so we've got our next episode of Learning More in production, and you're going to be able to catch that coming out next Wednesday. Of course, the entire back catalog of Learning More is available wherever you get your podcasts. We invite you to check out each one of our episodes. If you enjoyed this episode, I specifically would like you to go check out the episode that we did on PTSD. I will put a link in the podcast description for that as well. A fantastic conversation there too. Again, thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. I'm Russ, and I look forward to learning more with you next week.